All right, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 169. So in the news, I'm back on the Masonic Roundtable. It's good to be back, having a lot of fun with my brothers there. I was installed as the Worshipful Master of Waukegan Lodge number 78, and I just want to take a second to thank everybody who supported that and came out. And even if you couldn't make it, the people who watched streaming, great, great day. So the first thing we can get into is the first paper of the week, which is a Short Talk Bulletin, volume number 13, August 1935, number 8, called Old Romance by Unknown. Old Charges. Manuscript Constitutions. Manuscript Rolls. Do these sound foreboding? Only for students and delvers into the musty antiquity? They should not. For in their withered pages and faint inks of days long gone lies old romance of Freemasonry, a genuine thrill for him who finds joy in being one of a long, unbroken line of brethren, which stretches back into a dim and distant past. Some 76 of these old manuscripts are in existence, 9 more are printed versions of ancient lineage, and 13 others are known to have existed. Whether these later have been destroyed or will yet be found, only time will tell. The oldest of Freemasonry's documents is the Regis poem, sometimes called the Hallowell Manuscript. It dates from the 14th century. It probably was written AD 1390. Antiquarians are fairly well agreed that while it can hardly be from earlier, and it could be from a few years later, it is the only one which wholly in verse, an especially interesting circumstance in view of its age. Before the invention of printing, when writing was an art known only to a few learned men, it was a common practice to pass important information from man to man by means of song, doggerel sayings with some meter or rhyme, which made them easy to remember. As the Regis poem is obviously a copy of some older document, or documents, its form bears out of the contention of critics that its antiquity of substance is much greater than the date of its writing. Never a Freemason attends Lodge who does not utter the closing words of this ancient poem, which, so far as evidence goes, are thus the oldest words in our ritual. Amen, so mote it be. The manuscript is beautifully handwritten on 64 pages of vellum, some 4 by 5 inches in size. The script is Old English, and many of the words are difficult for the non-antiquarian reader to understand. For instance, the first two lines are, whose wool both, well read, and lock. May he find right in ye old book, which is literally, who will both well read and look, he may find written in an old book. G.W. Speth, famous English Masonic authority, compiled a glossary of the English words of the poem, invaluable to those who wish to translate this old document of the craft. The monk or priest, which the writer probably was, embellished his work with red shading on all initial letters. The 15 articles and 15 point articulus and punctus in the poem are also in red. The verse is written in couplets, and the majority of which are bracketed with right-hand side in red. The poem has 794 lines, of which the first 576 are Masonic, the rest being a sort of sermon, with a distinctly Roman church flavor, including references to the Sins 7, the Sweet Lady, or the Virgin Mary, Holy Water, etc. The document is of intense interest to Freemasons for many reasons. 15 articles and points repeated with variations in a large number of the older manuscripts are incontrovertible evidence that Masonry, even in those days, endeavored to inculcate morality, clean living, and right thinking, develop character, thus having a speculative side in operative days. Indeed, Robert Freck Gould, famous Masonic historian, initiated a controversy that has not yet ended when he commented on this poem as follows. These rules of decorum read very curiously in the present age, but their inapplicability to the circumstances of the working Masons of the 14th or 15th century will be at once apparent. They were intended for the gentlemen of those days, and in the instruction for behavior in the presence of a lord at a table, in the society of ladies, would have been equally out of place in a code of manners drawn up for the use of guild or craft artisans. In other words, Gould thought that the quote-unquote code of manners was intended for speculative masons and that gentlemen, not engaged as craftsmen, had already joined the fraternity as speculative. This has been denied by other scholars who maintain that men of good families or gentlemen joined the craft in the early days as operative masons. The articles and points both in this and later manuscripts are the foundations of the Masonic speculative teachings of the craft as known during the historical period from 1717 on. Moreover, internal evidence in this, as in other manuscripts, seems to indicate that the articles or points were read and recited to new brethren, just as modern Masons giving a charge at the end of each degree to impress the initiate with his duty as a Mason. Almost as old and fully as important as the Regis is the Matthew Cook manuscript, so called because it was prepared for publication by that scholar in 1861. The whole is dated with considerable assurance by scholars as about 1450, but the later part seems older, perhaps almost contemporary with the Regis poem. Like the Regis, the Cook manuscript is written on vellum, 40 folios, each about 4.5 by 3.5 inches in size, 960 lines. It is embellished with handsome initial letters in red and blue, in considerable contrast to the brown ink of the Old English text. The book is bound in oak covers, which bear the remains of a clasp. The English is considerably easier to read than the Regis poem, but it is still difficult. This commences with the seven liberal arts and continues with an explanation of geometry, includes a fanciful but romantic history of Freemasonry to be found in many other old charges of manuscript rolls, and ends with quote-unquote 9 articles and 9 points, and a charge concluding with a familiar amen, so mote it be. Papers without end have been written of this precious old document. Briefly, it is highly important because it seems definitely to show that it is a copy of an older document which was copied by a member of the craft. He not only wrote his own words, but added the quote-unquote Book of Charges, as it has been written and commented by still older writers. The word speculative occurs in its present Masonic sense. The 9 articles seem to be legal enactments, the points, matters enforced by the craft in ordinary guild life. A grandmaster existed, in fact, if not in name, presiding over a quote-unquote congregations of Masons only for the duration of the assembly. Finally, this document is obviously the source of many present usages and even ritual. Custom and ritual come not only from the Cook manuscript, but from many of the older of Freemasonry's documents. Masons today require that a man be quote-unquote freeborn. This is not a modernization designed to prevent men of color from being permitted in the craft. The 4th article of the Cook manuscript reads, quote, that no master shall for any reward take as an apprentice a bondsman born, because his lord to whom he is bonds to from his art, and carry him away with him out of the lodge, or out of the place he is working in, and because his fellows peradventure might help him and take his part, and thence manslaughter might arise. Herefore it is forbidden. And there is another reason, because his art was begun by the freely begotten children of great lords, as foresaid. Quote, the doctrine of the perfect youth is increasingly under fire in these times. More than one grand lodge has modified the ancient idea that only a physically perfect man can be made a Mason, changing a custom which has 500 years of antiquity behind it. The 6th article of Matthew Cook's manuscript reads, that no master from covetous or for gain shall accept an apprentice that is unprofitable, that is having any maim or defect, by reason of which he is incapable of doing a man's proper work. The 9th article, Cook manuscript, will have a familiar ring to all Master Masons, that no master shall supplant another, for it is said in the art of Masonry that no man can so well complete a work to the advantage of the Lord begun by another as he who began it intending to end it, in accordance with his own plans, or he to whom he shows his plans. The word Lord, of course, refers to the employer, not to deity. No man became a Mason who will not or cannot express a belief in deity. The 1st point Cook manuscript reads, to wit, whosoever desires to become a Mason, it behooves him before all things to love God and the Holy Church and all saints and his master and fellows as his own brothers. All Masons obligate themselves in loyalty to the laws, edicts, and resolutions of the Grand Lodge, the bylaws of their own lodge. Compare the Cook 4th point, he shall be no traitor to the art, and do it no harm, nor conform to any enactments against the art nor against the members thereof, but shall maintain it in all honor to the best of his ability, from whence comes a master's autocratic powers in the lodge, by which he controls the brethren with a stroke of a gavel to his pleasure in all that pertains to work or refreshment, debate or business. Read the cook's sixth point. In case of a disagreement between him and his fellows, he shall unquestioningly obey the master and be silent thereon at the bidding of the master, or of his master's warden in the master's absence, until the next following holiday, and shall then settle the matter according to the verdict of his fellows, and not upon a work day because of the hindrance to the work and to the Lord's interest. Modern Masonic appeal from a master's decision is to the Grand Master or his representative or Grand Lodge. The verdict of his fellows is as binding today as in 1450. Masons today must obey a summons. Modern lodges which forfeit their charter must give their resources to the Grand Lodge. In the day of the unknown Mason, who set down the articles and points of the Cook manuscript, the law ran. Therefore, be it known, if any master or fellow, being forewarned to come to the congregation, be contumacious and appear not, or having trespassed against any of the aforesaid articles, shall be convicted, he shall forswear his masonry, and shall no longer exercise the craft. And if he presumes to do so, the sheriff of the county in which he may be found at work shall put him in prison, and take all his goods for the use of the king, until the king's grace shall be granted and shown him. Solar references in Freemasonry are numerous. Circumambulation, for instance, and the frequent references to the rising and setting sun. In an old manuscript in the possession of Lodge Scoon and Perth in Scotland appears this: that sea, Ion, and the sun riseth in the east and setteth in the west. We would wish the blessing of God to attend us in all our waves and actions. In the H.F. Beaumont manuscript dated 1690, now in the West York's library, is a Latin description of the quote-unquote manner of taking an oath at the making of a Freemason. This is translated as follows, quote, "Then one of the elders holds out a book, and he or they that are to be sworn shall place his or their hands upon it, and the following precept shall be read." The Coyne and the Clapham manuscripts, both of the second half of the 17th century, probably about 1660 or 1670, explicitly state that the right hand must be used. The Clapham manuscript refers to the quote-unquote Bible, the Dodicey manuscript of 1765 to the Holy Bible, and the York manuscript number 2, 1704, to the Holy Scriptures. So many manuscript constitutions have references to secrecy that a catalog might be worrisome. Two, however, are of special interest. In the Harleian manuscript, somewhere between 1650 and 1700, appears this, quote, "There is a secure, or several, words and signs of Freemasons to be revealed to you, which, as you will answer, before God at the great and terrible day of judgment, keep secret, and not to reveal the same to any of the hearers of any person, but the misses, or the masters, and fellows of said society of Freemasons, so help me God," end quote. In a Dumfries Kilwinning manuscript number 4, about 1765, appears this, quote, "You are under vows, take heed, you keep, and promise you made in the presence of Almighty God, think not, yet mental reservation or equivocation will serve, for to be sure every word you speak the whole time of your admission is an oath," end quote. In the same manuscript is a reference to modes of recognition. Quote, "Nimrod taught you the signs and tokens so that they could distinguish one another from all the rest of mankind on earth," end quote. Again, in this manuscript, we find caution to the tiler and an admonition to learn the work. Quote, "No lodge or quorum of Masons shall give the royal secret suddenly, but upon great deliberation first let them learn his questions by heart, then his symbols, then do as the lodge thinks fit." So this bulletin may continue for many more pages, but enough has been said to show that the old, old pages, dimmed by time, the ink faded by the passage of hundreds of years, hold ancient romance for the Freemason. He, as he does, so did his Masonic ancestors. As says he, so said they, if not in the same language, at least with the same intent. Brethren of an old day, long before the formation of the Grand Lodge, held high the holy names of deity, exhorted to brotherhood, taught morality, mutual help, charity, benevolence, read lessons from the working tools, tried to square their actions by the square of virtue, but each, from the youngest to the oldest mason, may catch, if he will, the sweet faint perfume of the days that come not back, and thrill anew, as have so many uncounted and unknown, that he does today, as did, quote, all good brothers and fellows who have gone this way before. All right, that was actually a pretty difficult paper to read the way it is written and then coupled with the old language. So I apologize if there are areas that sound odd. If you would like a copy of the PDF so that you can read it yourself, which you might want to do, I would urge you to head on over to the Support the Show tab on WCYpodcast.com and download our app. So the app is available for Windows phones, Android phones, and iPhones. It's also on tablets. What the app is going to allow you to do, in addition to being able to listen to the show streaming, you'll be able to download the PDFs as bonus content. And that goes for every episode that we've ever done. So if there's a paper that I can upload that I've read for you on the show, it'll be there in that episode's bonus features. In addition, we give you a Masonic wallpaper and sometimes neat videos. So check that out. The app is $2 and it supports this show. Additional ways to support the show is obviously through PayPal, direct donation. Whether you give $1 or $2, any amount helps, and we really appreciate it. Again, just click the donate with the PayPal button, and you pick the amount. The third way is through FreemasonryArt.com. You can go there and check out any number of amazing Masonic items, including handmade aprons by Juan Sepulveda. So you can check those out. And if you decide to get something, use the checkout code WCY. You're going to get 10% off when you do that, as well as a little kickback to this show. And if you do like shopping as much as the rest of us, it's coming up the holiday season. Maybe you want to get a head start on your New Year's resolution. Do what everybody else does, is join a gym and all that kind of thing. If you're into healthy living supplements, please check out onnit.com and use the promo code WCY there as well. The same deal applies, 10% off for you, and a little portion comes back to this show, help keep the lights on. All right, this week's famous Freemason was born in 1838 and passed away in 1927. He was playwright and poet Charles Mair, noted for the blank verse drama, Tecumseh, a collection of his poetry, Dreamland, and other poems, and his formulation of the Canada First Movement. His thought, the Mackenzie Basin, 1908, detailed the negotiations which led to the transfer of the Hudson Bay Territories and the Treaty Commission of 1899. A popular poem, Love's Empery. O love, if those clear, faithful eyes of thine were ever turned away, there then should be no heavenly look to take the gloom from mine, nor any hills, nor any dales for me, nor any honeyed cups of eglantine, nor morning spilt of dew on land or sea. No sun should rise and leave his eastern tent to wake the music of the rambling wave, nor any freshness of the west be seen to sweep away night's savors of the grave. But when I gaze into those fadeless eyes, methinks I am some mysterious land, where far-off seas take color from the skies, and voiceless on a mountaintop I stand. That's it for this week. Please remember to follow us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, and you can check us out on Google Plus at the Google email address, wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can email me anytime at admin@wcypodcast.com. Please don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable airing Tuesday nights at 10, 9 central. We go live and syndicated forever on YouTube. And of course, we do have a podcast version of that as well. You can check out the Masonic Radio Theater. We have 2 episodes out. We are slowly working and almost ready to release episode number 3. It is a comedy. I think you will all enjoy it. And if you have some time, check out these websites, fellowcrafted.com for fine Masonic pens. Please check out Fraternal Ties for some of the best Masonic neckwear available anywhere. And a lot of times I post pictures of the things that I get from John Paul Gomez and Fraternal Ties, and people keep asking me, how do you get these things? Well, everything he does is very limited, so by the time I've already ordered them and I post pictures of them, they're gone. And people say, well, how on earth do you get these things? How do you order them? How do you know when they're coming out? And all I can tell you is you have got to follow Fraternal Ties on Facebook and you have got to sign up for his email list. That is pretty much the only way you can guarantee to get something. So with that, please check those out. At the close of the show, I do want to just go ahead and send a special shout out to Brother Steve Harrison, 33rd degree. He has been so generous in his donations to the show, and he just gave us a huge donation due to the sale of his book, Tales from the Craft. If you have not picked up a copy of Tales from the Craft, do it now. It's only a couple dollars, and I guarantee you it will keep you, if nothing else, completely entertained. Small quips and stories, paragraphs about some really interesting things that happened in Masonry. Brother Steve had some great research in this book. He took Masonic Wives' Tales and basically found the facts and put them all together. And what is left is a multitude of amazing stories. So please check that out. You can visit wcypodcast.com and click on the link for the bookstore, or you can just go to amazon.com and type in Stephen L. Harrison, or you can type in Tales from the Craft. Steve has another book out also, and it's called Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi. So if you are a brother from Missouri, that is definitely a book you should check out. If you're anywhere else in the States and enjoy Masonic history, check that book out also. So again, Brother Steve, thanks so very much for your generosity, and everybody else, please go get that book, Tales from the Craft. It really is great, and there will be a print version coming out soon. So currently it is a ebook, and it is fantastic. So with that, I'll talk to you all next week. Stay in the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.